This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
And welcome to Sci-Fi Hour at Joy on Paper, a show for writers and those who dream of writing, and for those who want to know the story behind the book. I am Bria Burton, filling in as a guest host. Your regular host, Patsy Gill, has so graciously asked me to host these wonderful Sci-Fi Hours once a month, and we're back with two awesome authors, and I'm so excited to talk to both of them. Right away, we are going to get into it with Kate Bronson, author of Clone Droid, and Big Ed. Do we have Kate on the line? Kate, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Hello, I hear you loud and clear. I am so excited to have you on the show, Kate. So I have to confess the listeners, I absolutely adore Kate Bronson because she and I have been good friends for many years. We're part of the same critique group. We have been writing together for a long time, and she has this awesome book called Clone Droid that I can't wait to talk to her about.
Oh, thank you so much, Bria, for having me on the show.
It is so fun. And let's just start by talking about your book. I'm going to grab it. I've got possibly people watching on YouTube and on my Facebook channel. I'm holding up your beautiful cover, Clone Droid, The New Wave. Let's just start by talking about what is this book? What was the idea? What got you going to even want to write this book?
Okay, well... It's funny, I love classic hard science fiction, and about 15 years ago, there was this resurgence of clone movies and books about androids and AI and that sort of thing, and I binge-watched a lot of movies that I just couldn't get enough of it, and I guess just from all the binge-watching, I guess it had an impact, and I came up with an idea for a story, and it actually came as a dream because I think I was just binge watching too much.
And as we've all done.
Yeah, and the story was so vivid, I couldn't shake it. So I thought, you know what, this is going to make a really good short story. So I took notes and I wrote it down, and then I kind of shelved it and forgot about it. And then I went, but it wouldn't die. It was one of those stories that just keeps coming back and nagging at you and saying, you know what, I'm important. So I started delving into the research on it and looking into a lot of the science behind it. And I just advanced this story. And like I said, it was supposed to be a short story originally titled The God Complex. And then it evolved into a novella. Mm-hmm. And as you know, it just took a life of its own and it kept evolving and it became a book. And now it's Clone Droid, The New Way.
Yes, and tell me about the main character in the story, the clone droid himself.
Okay, well, clone droid is classic hard science fiction, and it's a medical thriller of sorts, and it takes place later in the century, and Abe is the protagonist. He's the main character, and he's a cloned human with an android brain, and he's the prototype created by this mega corporation, Mac. For medical purposes, and he is an intelligent, sentient being, but he's also very aware that he's about to be killed, and that's something he'd like to avoid. So he is essentially, like I said, he's the first in a line of lucrative medical products that is going to be used for organ harvesting to help human transplant patients. And in theory, clone droids will end organ trafficking on the black market, but Abe's human appearance has embroiled the company in a lot of controversy and scrutiny. So to protect their interests, the executives of the company decide to unleash a plan where they will sacrifice Abe to save human lives and further their own ends and get rid of this controversy and continue with a line of clone droid that are a little less upsetting to the general public. Well, Abe's the team leader for the project, Dr. Tamara Everett, is not thrilled about losing her prototype, so she fights back. She gets caught up in corporate politics trying to save her prototype, and she only finds herself in a no-win situation. Meanwhile, in the background, Abe is a much smarter and more creative being than anyone realized.
Is he really?
Yeah. You know, that nagging question about AI creating something that's smarter than us.
Right.
And he has a different vision for the future, so ultimately he wants to survive, and he executes plans of his own. And that's the countdown for the book, is his countdown for survival.
I love it. I've, of course, read the book. I love the book. These topics are also so timely. When you first started writing this and we were reading each other's writing years ago, I remember thinking, like, man, this feels like it could happen in some kind of future. And now you're describing your book and I'm thinking, it sounds so pertinent to today, like the things that are going on today. So what are some of the things that you, when you were researching, I guess my question is, do you notice from when you first started writing it just a few short years ago to now, are there things you're noticing that you're going, oh, and we're already there? Or you're thinking, okay, we're a little farther away from these types of technological advances than what I was thinking? Or as you were doing research and even looking into things now, what are your thoughts on some of those?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's hard to stay ahead of the curve, actually. That's, I think, one of the difficulties for hard science fiction writers these days is to try to keep it believable, because reality is actually on the edge, is always pushing that boundary of believability right now. It seems like we're just skyrocketing through advancements almost too quickly, and it's really hard to stay up with the curve. Like, when I was researching this at the time, this is back in when I first started researching this, is around 2010, mm-hmm. 2011, and the advancements were just leaping forward in, gene editing technology and neuroscience and that sort of thing. And I was like, wow, okay, how do I keep my book relevant but also keep it ahead? You know, if I'm projecting into the future, how do I foresee what's happening when it's unveiling and it's, and moving along so quickly right now?
And you're talking about the hard science fiction genre. Mm-hmm. Who are some of the authors that you have gleaned from or taken from that have helped you in your writing journey?
Oh, there's so many. I did a lot of research into neuroscience, and I won't even be... A lot of the research that you do for writing like this, you delve into it at the time, but because you don't use it every day, when you get away from it for a few years, it's like, oh, I wrote that? Oh, wow. You know, you look back and you think, oh, all the research you did it's kind of overwhelming. And at the time, it makes sense. But later on, when you step back, you're like, wow, that's, you know, there's a lot of stuff I don't remember because I'm not using it every day. But I'd have to say that the actual authors that inspired me were Isaac Asimov, the classic sci-fi authors, who, you know, delved into, like, the Foundation series that he wrote and the Robot series and anything with Daniil Oliver, which was one of his main characters in the Robot series. I just loved those books. And books by Carl Sagan, Michael Crichton. Larry Niven, The Protector, is fabulous. Mm-hmm. The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Robert Heinlein. That sort of thing. Robert J. Sawyer. And, you know, there's a... military sci-fi and that sort of thing that I got into that I really liked by Jack Campbell and Joshua Dalzell, but those are more often to, you know, what I enjoy to read. But as far as something that matches with what I was researching at the time,
I'd
have to say it was the classic hard sci-fi authors, because it just resonated with, you know, they put out warnings of what could come. And you know, even Philip K. Dick, you know, with Minority Report, all that sort of thing. You're seeing aspects of what they wrote actually come to light now.
Yeah, that's what I keep thinking, too. I know we've talked about Michael Crichton a lot together, you and I, and we've talked about that scene in Jurassic Park where Ian Malcolm says, your scientists are so preoccupied with whether or not they could, they didn't stop to think if they should. That's like,
exactly.
That's one of my favorite all-time lines, you know, and it's the ethical piece of, mm-hmm. of anything exploratory, including the sciences of all types. And so that's, in many ways, I think that's the big picture message of your book. That's mm-hmm. one of the big themes of your book, is that question of the ethical piece. So what do you think about kind of the current trends with AI in particular? We are seeing a lot of the chat GPT stuff. We're seeing, mm-hmm. you know, just what does seem like a very quick trajectory toward toward AI. So do you have thoughts to share about what you're seeing now?
It's for me, I think it's a little scary because, and I think that's why you see Elon Musk and others warning, you know, placing warnings out there about advancing AI too quickly, or not advancing it too quickly, but advancing it depending on, I guess I'd have to say, the agenda. You know, why are we advancing it that quickly? And are we doing so for profit, for an agenda? Is it, you know, are we, because it's like a baby. AI is taking in all this information about humanity, and it's using it because it's being employed into different aspects of our lives all over the place. And you know, that's where you want to be careful, because if you program something negative into an AI, you know, the negative aspects that we have as humans, rather than, you know, balancing it with a positive to give it a better understanding of what it's dealing with and what it should, how it should react to situations, you're going to bias its I guess its way of dealing with humanity. And that's the scary aspect, and that's what we're seeing right now. I think with Google, it just had its AI just kind of blew up in Google's face recently.
Yes, I think you're right about that. And so I was thinking too about your character, Abe, is sentient. So when we are talking about AI, the AI in reality, the scientific AI of today, 2024, there is no sentience involved, right? So, I mean, I guess that's up for debate, but I'm going to say there's not. There's not sentience.
It is up for debate, but yeah.
But Abe, so his character knows, so he's created for the purpose of helping humanity. He is not human. He's a clone of humans with a with an android brain. So tell me about the ethics that the people in the story, what are they saying? Oh, this is okay to chop up this clone, because he looks he's if someone saw him on the street, they'd think he was human, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. He'd blend right in. And the thing is, he's got the capability of advanced AI that we're trying to reach for the future, and he's also got the human aspects, so he can definitely blend, but he can also manipulate, and it makes him a two-sided coin. It makes him beneficial to humanity, but it can also make him a threat. And you know, the book doesn't really, I'm not going to go into details because I don't want to give that away.
we don't have to go into spoilers,
right? But he he's a projection of what what scientists are trying to achieve right now, and he is,
Well, and I was especially thinking about, they created a brain for him that's synthetic. Is in the book, it seems like that is for the purpose of saying, see, he's not human. Yeah. We get to chop him up and it's no big thing.
Exactly, that's it. They get around the legality of chopping up a human being for donor parts by, you know, giving him an android brain, so that it's a loophole in the legality of it. We're not killing a sentient human being. We're just taking this creature, this cyborg, and sacrificing him for the betterment of humanity, so to speak. And it becomes that ethical question of whether, are you doing it for profit? Are you doing it for an agenda? Are you actually doing this to benefit society at the expense of a sentient living being? And it's that age-old question of, is this really right? Should we really be playing God in this way? And the scary thing I'm finding is that there are scientists out there right now that are leading in some areas, in neuroscience, in dealing with trying to create cyborgs. They're actually talking about implanting chips into human brains and trying to, not just mapping the human brain, but actually trying to create cyborg humans, and that's something that they want to do for the future, and I find that rather terrifying.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was going to mention something I saw recently on Twitter, or formerly known as Twitter X, whatever it's called now. There was apparently the very first tweet done by a man who has a Neuralink brain chip implanted, and he did his first tweet only using the brain chip. Like, he didn't type it, he used his mind. Have you heard about that? Have you seen that?
I have heard that they were working on that, but I didn't realize that.
So this was just this week. This was just like a couple days ago, I believe, or maybe at the very end of last week. And I saw the tweet, and it raises so many questions, because I'm like, can they prove that he did that tweet? I don't know. I haven't done enough research into it yet. But I guess the whole thing with chips and sensors implanted in the brain, it's not new. Neuralink is not the first to do that. There's a New York Times article back from 2006 talking about a paralyzed man has a sensor implanted in his brain, and he's able to control a computer, a television set, just using his thoughts. And this was reported back in 2006 in the New York Times. So it's not like this is brand new, but I guess it's just, it's especially timely as far as what we're looking at as authors, that there is now someone, and this man who has the Neuralink, and specifically Elon Musk's Neuralink company, he's also paralyzed. So the purpose of it is to help someone who is paralyzed or can't use their hands. And so it's this, the goal and the motivation sounds benevolent, right? Mm-hmm. It sounds like it's for good purpose, just like in your book. It sounds like they're trying to save people's lives by just cloning, like you're recreating human tissue so that it can be used for living people who have, you know, all sorts of stuff. And again, the ethical questions that come up with that. And I guess there's no academic papers yet, or I'm not quite clear on that. I just saw something that when I tried to do a very brief search of how does this work? Like, what are they saying causes this to where he can use his mind and tweet and apparently play some Mario Kart? And this is all, there's a whole thread for him doing all this on Twitter. You know, what are the logistics of this that other scientists could read it and look at it? There's really nothing that I have been able to find. And that, to me, that is like, I have so many questions.
Well, that's exactly what happened to me when I was researching for this book. And that's the one thing I found, is that in science, I think a lot of it is self-policing. And they do their own, you know, they publish their work, and I'm not a scientist, so I can't really speak to that. But from what I saw in the research I did, there's not a lot of regulation or control that says, oh, you can't do this or you can't do that. It's more waiting to see what the laws, where the laws come in to kind of control what happens. But that's the ethical dilemma that you have in medicine, is advancing it for the human welfare of society. But, you know, there's always a hidden agenda, and that's the problem that we have with humanity through history, through all of time, is you always have somebody who's going to push an agenda or push research or advance technology to weaponize it or to use it in some money-making way or in some way that isn't going to be beneficial as it's, you know, portrayed to be. And that always becomes that, you know, that double-edged sword that you're working with when you're trying to advance something. And if you don't have someone somewhere saying, no, this is, you know, we're doing it this way because we're benefiting society, but we have to be careful that we don't misuse the technology in a way that's going to actually be damaging or controlling.
And I was also thinking of the best intentions. There are unknown consequences, that like the playing God comment that you made earlier. I mean, the people doing these things, there could be these consequences we're not even aware of. And I'm thinking of, let's go back to Jurassic Park. They did not know that the dinosaurs would start reproducing because they were able to, through this genetic makeup that they had from the frogs that could change gender. And so it's these unintended consequences because they think they have it all under control. And that that kind of picture of, I wonder how many scientists right now think, oh, we've got this under control because of this, and this, and then there could be some aspect they don't even understand yet, that we as humans don't fully understand the full aspects of artificial intelligence yet, most likely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's why I tell everybody, you've got to read Kate's book. It's so it's timely. It's so essential to the current AI dilemma and just brings up all these wonderful issues. Let's also get a chance to hear about your other writing. Tell me. So we've talked Clone Droid. We've got what else is going on with you and your writing?
Well, to talk about my current projects, I kind of have to step back a little bit. As you know, my background is not in literature, but it's in political science and finance, which has actually helped me a lot with the writing of science fiction and working on Clone Droid because those fields are research-oriented. But I actually began writing nonfiction first, quite by accident, and that's how I got into it. I started writing about my mother's unique childhood she had growing up in northern Ontario, back in the wilderness during the Great Depression. She was the daughter of a French-Irish fur trapper and hunter, and I grew up hearing about all these little stories and tales that were just amazing. They were like listening to made-up stories, but they weren't. They were just fantastical in a lot of ways, and I thought, over time, I thought, well, these stories, I don't want to lose them, and she's the last of her family that experienced all this, and she was the keeper of that knowledge, so for the rest of the family, I needed to record them, so I decided to start recording these stories, and it ended up turning into a book that I wrote for the family called Blue Mountain, and it was just—it's a huge book. And since then, I've had an agent inquire about it, so I'm reworking it into two books. So that's one of my current projects is trying to make Blue Mountain into two books to submit to this agent, and I'd have to say. That the story itself, if you wanted to compare it to something, it would be like A River Runs Through It mixed with The Revenant. It's sort of a little bit of both in many ways. And apart from Blue Mountain, while I was writing that, I realized that I enjoyed, writing, so I got into it, and I was writing science fiction because that's one of my passions. And also, like I said, the narrative nonfiction. And so some of my other current projects are short stories that I've written for Chicken Soup for the Soul. And my very first story that I published with them back in 2018, I think I've had six stories published with them. And the very first one I had published was about my rescued racing dog. And it just republished in February in a new book by them called Me and My Dog.
Oh, and it sweet.
Really, yeah. Yeah. And what I love about them is they're very family-oriented and they're very charity-oriented. So the royalties from this book are going directly to American Humane to help other dogs in need. So I think that's just a wonderful thing.
That is awesome.
So that's one of my current projects, is working and writing short stories for Chicken Soup for the Soul, working on Blue Mountain. And I also have future science fiction coming up. I have another book by in the Clone Droid series.
Oh, can't wait for that one.
Thank you. Yeah, it's called Clone Droid: The Next Wave. So I'm working on that. I'm not sure when it'll be released, but it's definitely in the works.
Awesome. And they can find you at katebronson.com, correct? All the listeners?
Yes, that's correct.
And I'm going to spell it CateBronson.com.
That's right.
Okay, and they can find all about you, your writing. Your book is on Amazon. Any other place they can get it?
Right now, it's just on Amazon.
Okay.
And apart from doing a few local in the Florida area book signings.
Yeah,
Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Kate, it has been such an honor to talk to you, and I'm so thankful that you were able to come on today. And we'll definitely have you back when the next wave gets published.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Bria.
Okay, have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Now. Bye. All right, we are going to be coming back after commercial with another wonderful guest, Sarah Zachrich Jang. So stay tuned, and we'll catch you in just a few minutes.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Looking for inspiration? Looking for something that will intrigue you? Then this book is for you. Jim Lamb's poems start out as caterpillars, creepy, crawly, and raw. Then a miracle happens as they transform into colorful, bright, and conspicuous works of art. You can find Jim's new book of poetry, Hurting Butterflies, at Amazon.com. It's the perfect gift for the book lover in your life, even if it's you. Hurting Butterflies, the perfect holiday gift, available on Amazon. Get Hurting Butterflies.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Bria with Joy on Paper Radio, and we're back for the top half of the hour for Sci-Fi Hour, and we are just about to chat with an incredible author. First, I want to introduce her through the book buzz that I was able to do for her book, When I'm Her. So, Big Ed, would you go ahead and play that book buzz?
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2024 new release, When I'm Her, by Sarah Zachrich Jang, with stellar narration by Jesse Valinsky and Louisa Zhu. Now, let's download the book buzz. College roommates Mary and Elizabeth share a dark secret. Thanks to Mary's internship at a tech company, she borrows a proprietary technology called an empathizer, without her boss's knowledge and at the risk of arrest if anyone finds out. But how can Mary evaluate the effectiveness of the empathizer without using it? The bracelet is deceptively simple-looking for a device that allows two people to switch bodies. When Mary, a quiet and less than sociable type, has the opportunity to explore the world from inside the body of drop-dead gorgeous extrovert Elizabeth, her desire to keep switching places with her roommate grows with each out-of-body experience. Many years later, their friendship long since shattered, a detective confronts Mary about the suspicious death of her former co-worker at the tech company. Mary suspects that Elizabeth is involved, and Mary has access to another empathizer, so she plans her revenge. But once she's back in Elizabeth's body, her perfect plan to get back at her former roommate quickly crumbles, as Mary realizes she's in far more danger as Elizabeth. This twisty sci-fi thriller blend will keep readers guessing and rapidly turning pages all the way to the shocking end. Author Sarah Zachrich Jang grew up in Michigan and has always had a flair for the morbid and mysterious. Her debut novel, The Other Me, blends sci-fi and thriller genres while examining one woman's alternate lives. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off. Okay, and we are back with Sarah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Welcome to Joy on Paper. I am so excited to have you on today. And can you make sure
Thanks
that I am
so
pronouncing your name correctly? Will you say your whole name?
I'm Sarah Zachrich Jang.
Okay, great. And tell me, first and foremost, about this title, When I'm Her. So is that something that you chose, or did your publisher or your agent, was that a collaborative effort in getting your title?
It was definitely a collaborative effort. My editor is really good at coming up with these kind of short, snappy titles. So it was pretty much her work once the book was done.
Okay, yes. And so this whole premise of switching bodies, and we're talking the consciousness moves from one character to the other, and they trade places. How did you come up with that idea?
Well, I was thinking about friendships, female friendships specifically, and kind of the intensity of those emotions that you have when you're friends with someone. And also kind of how friends take on each other's characteristics. So When I'm Her was just kind of the extreme example of that.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been writing?
I've been writing since I was a kid. I started writing seriously around 2015.
Okay.
I'd taken a break, and I, you know, needed a creative outlet after getting a grown-up job. I'd been playing in bands during my 20s.
Oh, wow.
I needed a hobby that kind of didn't keep me out all night. So I turned back to writing.
Uh-huh.
And from the spark of my first idea to writing and revising it, to getting an agent, getting a book deal, that took about 5 years.
Okay. And so this is actually your second book. Tell me a little bit about that journey where you've had your first book published, and these two books don't go together in a series, right? They're both standalone novels.
Right. Yeah. They're standalone.
And so you come, you know, to work on your second book, you've got the agent, you've got a publishing company. Were they already set up with, next book you write, call us first, we want first, you know, right of refusal? Is that how it was set up for you?
It was actually a two-book deal.
Ah.
So when they signed my debut, they had agreed to publish my second novel. So we kind of had to go through a few different ideas before we hit on one that my publisher wanted me to write. So once that happened, the book was supposed to come out in 2022, and it didn't work out that way because I had to do a lot more revision than I thought I would.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've learned through that process is kind of, you know, it takes however long it's going to take, and sometimes the book just needs more time.
And today, I should mention this, today is the official launch day of When I'm Her. It's actually launch day for you today, which, congratulations, it's so exciting. And I was so privileged to get the advanced copy to be able to chat with you about the book. So when you had finished that first book, and they were telling you, okay, we want you to write this type of story. So that's a little bit different than a writer sitting at home, which maybe that this was your experience with your first book, what you just described. I'm sitting here, I've got ideas, I'm going for it. And then now you have someone else saying, here's the idea I want you to go with. What was that experience like as a writer who, you know, hadn't necessarily been told what ideas to focus on before?
Well, it was my idea that I submitted to them.
Okay, got it.
It was basically just, I had submitted like a kind of a list of short synopses. I think the last
ideas I submitted to them. It was like three different ideas, and they picked the one that they liked best. But it was my idea.
Still
it wasn't
your
them
idea.
Like,
okay.
Oh, you need to write this. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Okay. So there are, I know there are publishing companies that will say, like, please write to this spec. So that's not the
right.
case here.
I mean, I think that's more like IP and
book
packaging kind of stuff.
And you and I actually first met back at the Florida Writers Conference in Orlando a few years ago. Are you involved with any other writers groups currently? Are you still involved with FWA?
I haven't been back to the conference since before the pandemic, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I am a member of Sisters in Crime, and I have a couple of different critique groups. I have one in person that basically got me through drafting my first novel, and then I have an online one that's a little more spread out. And I mean, like, what's really saved me, like, you go on Twitter and they tell you, like, get an author group chat, and my author group chats have absolutely saved my life. You know? I don't know what I would have done without them. So.
Oh, that's awesome. And when you do your book signings, for example, now with your launch day today, do you have any kind of event in person today, or is it mostly just all online?
I do have an in-person launch. It's at Third House Books in Gainesville, and today at 6:30.
Okay, good. So any
exciting.
Listeners who happen to be near Gainesville or willing to drive over there if you're in Florida... 6:30 p.m. and what's the name of the place again?
It's Third House Books.
Third House Books. Awesome. Yeah, so that's going to be really exciting. And do you do any kind of book tour with your publisher, or is that kind of on your own? I know sometimes authors have to kind of come up with their own depending on the type of publisher they have.
Yeah, I mean, most authors do have to book their own if they want to go on a tour, unless they're just huge. So I don't have any kind of tour planned. I do have like some events, conferences and things come in the works for the future.
Okay.
And
what I was thinking about going from your debut novel, which was, remind me the title of your first book.
It was The Other Me.
Okay, that was your debut novel, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And what would you say is something you learned going from publishing a debut novel to now, today, publishing a second book? Is there some tidbit you could share with other authors who are maybe on this journey, and something you might have wished you had known, or even just something that you learned that you find interesting about this whole process of getting your book out there through a traditional publisher?
Well, with When I'm Her, I approached the writing of it much more like a thriller. I mean, I kind of concentrated more on hitting those thriller beats. With The Other Me, I was kind of drafting. Like, I wrote several drafts of both books. But with that book, it was kind of more meandering, more literary almost. And with When I'm Her, I was trying to get more of a genre feel. And I think I definitely did that.
Agreed.
And
oh,
I think,
yeah.
Yeah.
And what, so as I'm reading the book, you've got Elizabeth and Mary doing the body switches. They're the college roommates. Elizabeth ends up becoming this big social media influencer because she's just the person that everybody pays attention to. She seems to be that type. And then Mary is a little quieter. She's a little more reserved. And so this switch almost seems to be this, like, experiment, and it is in literal sense, it's an experimental kind of proprietary technology in the book. They get to explore, you know, looking through the eyes of another person, and even getting to have someone look at you thinking you're that other person, and what that's like, having someone look at you and think, oh, you're Elizabeth, but it's Mary in there. So some of the things that I know I was thinking of just from the sci-fi aspects of it, what were you thinking about when you were writing just some of the logistics of, there's a scene where Mary comments on how much taller Elizabeth is, and just the logistics of that. Did you, I know know the story itself lends itself way more to the thriller aspect where we're moving along quickly through this page turner. Did you have to kind of think much about the logistical part, or it just didn't enter as much in the story? I was just curious about that part.
I definitely tried to put myself in the head of someone who's, because if you're in a different body, like your experience is going to be totally different, right? Of moving through the world, of, you know, how high up in the, you know, world you are, how you can see things, how people treat you. You know, treat people who are more attractive better usually. So I wanted to get all of those aspects in there and kind of I tried to get the like clumsiness of having a body that you're not used to, where you don't really know how much space you take up and all of that. Because, I mean, you don't realize how much your body just affects your experience of living in the world.
Right. Yeah, it got me thinking about that a lot. And in the book, the characters have there's some wonderful psychological aspects to this book, too, because you've got the creepy co-worker who essentially is it's like a nepotism type situation because his aunt is the head of the company, so he can kind of
he's awful. I love him.
He can kind of do what he wants and be the total creeper guy. And Mary is more just, I want to experience like what it's like to be Elizabeth. Like that's kind of her whole motivation, especially later, because we get thrust into the part where the detective shows up at the beginning and there's been a death. And so it's just this wonderful mystery aspect that goes into the thriller part. So it got me thinking about the psychological aspects, too, that you explore of being in another person's body. Yes, like what you just said about how they look at you and how they would look at you differently. Yeah, any other just aspects of that you found interesting as you were maybe doing just some research or even just looking into different parts of your book?
Well, the tech part of it, I actually got a lot of inspiration from the story of Theranos.
Oh.
And Elizabeth Holmes, who's in prison now for defrauding investors and various other people. But just basically, like how, like the kind of idealism and greed of developing this like world-changing technology. So I kind of had fun with that. I didn't get super into the like scientific nitty-gritty.
Right.
But I did want to touch on like the societal effects.
Yeah, and it's so effectively done because it is. I was just talking to a hard sci-fi author who is doing the hard sci-fi where the science is the primary driver of the story. This is more like the sci-fi umbrella is up there. It is at the top, but it's just because this technology hasn't been invented. It doesn't exist in our current world, so it falls under that, you know, possible future, you know, technology that could, but the story is really what you said, the friendship between these two, the breaking of the friendship, and I won't spoil anything, but the very twisty, you know, turny all the way to the end where they're back and forth in each other's bodies. And it's just this wonderful culmination of what ends up happening to them. And I have to say I was pleasantly surprised at the end because I had thoughts about where I thought it was going to go, and it went a little bit different than I thought. So that's always fun as a reader.
Yeah, that's good.
And what would you say is your current project? I'm gonna say is launching this book. Do you have another book that you're already working on, a book three, or any other writing projects?
Well, I'm definitely working on book three. It's another kind of cross genre novel. It's got elements of like grounded fantasy, maybe tech thriller, second chance romance. So that's been coming together. I've got a draft of that and I'm revising.
Oh, that sounds fascinating. I always love asking authors this. So I have not had a chance to listen to the audiobook yet. Is that releasing today as well, or does that release at a different time?
It should release today. It should be available in all formats.
Okay. So I noticed there are two narrators. So tell me a little bit about mm-hmm. that. Did you have any part in picking the narrators? Was that all your publisher? And have you gotten a chance to sample any of it?
Yeah, I mean, I actually was pretty involved. They a couple months before, they emailed me with some samples of some options, and they wanted, like, I was pretty, they asked me a lot of questions about how we wanted to play the process of recording it, like what I wanted the voices to sound like, how we could kind of signal to the reader that this one character, that Mary was in Elizabeth's body and Elizabeth was in Mary's body. So that was a really involved, like, fascinating process to me.
Oh,
and
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a huge audiobook person. I don't really have, like, a lot of opportunity to listen to audiobooks, so I haven't listened to the whole thing, but I've heard samples, and it sounds amazing.
It's, speaking of the logistical, it is an interesting logistical dilemma. Even as a reader, I'm reading the book, and the chapter title will say Mary, and then in parentheses, it'll say Elizabeth. And at first, I was doing it backwards, so I'd start to read the chapter, and I'd think, oh, this is Mary in Elizabeth's body. But it was the opposite. It's Elizabeth right. is the one in Mary's body. So once I figured that out after, like, one or two chapters, I went, okay, I've got it. But with the audio, that is an interesting dilemma, because you've got the person who is voicing Mary presumably staying the same. So mm-hmm. I imagine that's how the audiobook works.
Right. And I mean, they switched up the chapter titles a little bit, so that I think they said, like, Mary in Elizabeth's body and Elizabeth in Mary's body. So it's
okay.
a little more clear.
Spelled
in the audio.
It out a little bit. You got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Which I could see why that might be needed for the audio, too, because they're not seeing
sure.
the parentheses.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
What other things would you like readers to know about this book? Is there anything in particular you just had so much fun with? Any particular scenes or characters? Or I mean, we're talking about some of the darker aspects of the book. I would say are some of these characters that you start to learn their motivation, and you're going, ooh, this is, there's some dark stuff that happens.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, it's a really fun book. It does get into some dark subjects. There's a content warning at the beginning because of that.
Mm-hmm,
But there's a lot of twists and turns. There's a lot of toxic masculinity. Ultimately, there's kind of a grudging alliance that mm-hmm. to defeat that, not to give away any spoilers.
Mm-hmm,
But yeah, I mean, I think it's a, like, great, fun, satisfying book.
It's definitely a satisfying read. Tell us where, so are you active on social media where people can find you?
Yeah, I'm mostly on Instagram and Threads. I'm under Sarah_EZJ. And I also have a newsletter that you can sign up at my website at sarahzj.com.
Okay, and it's Sarah with an H, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yep.
Sarah with an H, zj.com. And is your name a pen name, or is that your actual name?
It's my actual name.
Okay, yes. I also just like to ask authors about pen names, because sometimes it's really interesting stories how they come up with their names. And so when someone is interested in both of your books, they can find them pretty much all publishing, Amazon and Audible.
Yeah, definitely online. Yeah.
Would you have any advice, before we finish up, do you have any advice for authors who are wanting to go the traditional route? Obviously, indie publishing has come so far where it is a very reputable path to take for some, that and it's working well for a lot of authors. You have exclusively gone the traditional publishing path, correct?
Right. Yeah. I mean, indie publishing is great, but it's like so much work.
and I imagine there's still you have work to do too, obviously. So what advice or even just experience could you share with some of the listeners who might be interested in the whole, hey, well, I want to find an agent. How did she do that?
Right. I mean, I would say do your homework before you start querying agents. There are a lot of resources online about, you know, how to write a query letter that grabs attention and, like, really communicates what your book is about and how great it is. So I would really work on that query letter. I would, you know, look at agents and see what they want rather than just kind of shooting out a bunch of queries to anyone. Kind of target as much as you can. And I mean, I haven't queried since 2019, so it's probably a lot different now, but
there's
the
places. Yeah, there's places authors can go to see what these agents are looking for. Because I think you're right. I think it can change. Where if you look up an agent, they might have a wish list, and they say, "Oh, yeah. I'm looking for sci-fi thriller," and then maybe a year or two later, they're not looking for that genre. They might be looking for fantasy.
Right.
So it is. Yeah, it is good to keep up with it if you're actively querying and make sure that you are targeting the right type of agent. So wonderful advice there. And yeah, let's share with the listeners, in case they're just tuning in, one more time, your book launch today. Tell everybody where and when.
It's at 6:30 tonight at Third House Books in Gainesville.
Awesome. All right. So, Sarah, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate getting to talk to you about your book. It's such a wonderful book. I'm With Her is the title. For those
When I'm Her.
Oh, sorry. I just said it backwards.
That's okay.
When I'm Her. This is where your mind is going to be. You're going to enjoy the psychological aspects of this book for sure. So
thank you so much for having
me. You're very welcome. And when your next book is coming out, we'll definitely have to have you back on the show.
All right.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for listening. We just had some awesome conversations with Kate Bronson, author of Clone Droid, with Sarah Zachrich-Jeng. And I did pronounce her name right, which I'm thrilled, because so often I look at a name and I think, I'm going to just go for it. But sometimes I get it wrong. So it's great to know that I did pronounce her name correctly. And her book, When I'm Her. And you're going to just love these books. So you can pick them up on Amazon and pretty much where books are available. If you are tuning in again, we will be back for Joy on Paper Thursday at 11 a.m. This show is bi-weekly, Tuesday, Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And Big Ed, thank you so much for having me here in the studio with you. Thank you for all that you do. And Patsy, who I am so thankful for. She has just done incredible things for the writing and reading community here in Tampa Bay. I am so thankful for you allowing me to come on the show again. It is always such a pleasure. So, if you are a reader, keep reading. If you are a writer, keep writing. And for those who dream of having their book published, just know, don't give up. Keep at it, and your dreams just might come true. Thank you, and we'll talk to you all later. Bye-bye.